Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, so now we're on air at Blog Talk Radio. I tell you, I believe that next month we will have things more smooth than this month. You know, we're going to repeat these meetings the first of every month. I didn't do a lot of advertising on this one because I expected this first month to have its glitches, and boy, was I right. But on the first weekend of October, we'll repeat the same meetings, and we will, of course, have many, many more people because we will do our advertising more thoroughly. And I really appreciate all of you who came on today. We were listening to Ms. Olga tell what happened to her son, some of the things. Also, we have Ms. Diana Sprouse, and we also have Ms. I'm used to calling her Hickman, but we have another guest. Now, do you want to talk about anything? Any of you want to talk about anything particular to your case, you go right ahead. I'm going to give general information about the international action itself. And as I said, we're inviting 100 people who have been damaged by the withholding of mental health treatment and drug alcohol treatment, and 100 people who have been damaged because someone they may not know, or they may know them, but they're not acting on their part. They're acting on their own part, because they themselves were personally damaged by an individual who had mental illness and drug alcohol problems, issues, addiction. So Ms. Olga was talking because her son's case categories. He was deprived of treatment for 14 days while he was in Harris County Jail in Florida, on purpose deprived. And when he was released, he was in full psychosis, full psychiatric crisis. And he ended up, within 14 hours of jail release, shooting a police officer. So therefore, that both families could possibly join this lawsuit. He signed on a plea bargain for him to go to court because he could have pleaded temporary insanity, but he was induced to sign this plea bargain, and that was in disregard for her power of attorney. You had his power of attorney, did you not, Ms. Olga, or you didn't have it? You did? You had it. And they disregard. That happens so often, is that family members know that they need the power of attorney over their loved one with mental illness, but very often their power of attorney is ignored by the courts, ignored by the prosecutors. And they go ahead and induce these people who are on record as having an inability to always think clearly for themselves. They ignore that, and they take a person who's in a very crisis situation and induce them to sign plea bargains despite that. So that seems to be a violation also. Our new guest who called, her situation is that her husband, who was a Vietnam veteran, was actually deprived of treatment. She had put in a treating center once, but he was untreated, and I think that his situation came from that rule they have that you cannot enforce treatment unless they prove to be a danger to self and others. So that rule stood in the way of her being able to get adequate health care for her husband, who was a Vietnam veteran, and he also had drug problems. He dealt in drugs. You know, he used drugs. And so she couldn't get the help that she needed for that reason. And one day this man, her husband, decided to call police and put in a false police report. And he said that she had run over him with her car. Now, this man was not hurt in any way, didn't even have a torn clothes, no dirt on him or anything else, but he said that his wife had run over him with her car. That was his hallucination. And police actually stopped this wife and arrested her based on this PTSD veteran's word that he had just gotten run over with a car. And she was jailed for 3 days. And when she was released from jail, she was given instructions by the court to immediately leave town. She could not live in that county anymore. And this happened right here in Georgia. And what was the name of the county? Glenn County, Georgia. Glenn County. She had to leave town immediately with the clothes on her back. Now, to show you, on one hand, the police are acting on what her husband said, and on the other hand, it's strange that they did not even tow her car. If this woman allegedly just used her car as a deadly weapon, you would think that it would be towed. You would think that they wouldn't willingly hand her the keys to it 3 hours, 3 days later and say, get out of town. So it's just odd. Anyway, she did leave town. As a matter of fact, she left this state. I'm in Georgia also. And she was completely unprepared to do that. She wasn't allowed to go to her house and get any clothes or anything else, and she had to leave town. This is really just, it's so outrageous, it makes me stutter. Should be something that everyone is concerned about, because if a mentally ill person can have their caretaker arrested and made to clear out of town immediately, out of town, not just out of the house, but out of town, then that gives the right for anyone with mental illness to call police and report any hallucination, any lie, that not meaning to lie necessarily, but born of their mental illness, a hallucination. And they could have their neighbor arrested. They could have their caretaker arrested. They could have either arrested. It's that this person is mentally ill, they don't necessarily investigate thoroughly to make sure that a crime has happened. And this woman's case certainly did not. And I think that the reason is, and she believes that the reason is, that this was a case really on the police officer's part of housing discrimination. Housing discrimination. This man is black. His wife is black. And by them making his caretaker, who saw to the bills in the household, you know, he had an income, she had an income, but she saw to the bills for the most part, especially with his drug usage. When they put her out of the house, it just naturally follows that pretty soon after, they're going to be able to put him out of the house. Do you follow me? Now, these this black man and black woman, this family, were one of only two black people, black families living in that subdivision, as I understand it. They were only two. And when he lied on his wife out of his hallucination, and the corrupt justice system allowed that hallucination to stand as though she had really done that, and told her to leave the county immediately. Now it seems to me that, you know, that's putting the punishment before the crime is proved. You know.
Well,
it's,
having her leave the county is against the law. She lives there.
Well, they banned her. And that's before anything had been to court. She's never been to court. That's the thing. She's never been to court. They punished her without court, told her to leave the county immediately, leave her home, leave her husband, who she loved, by the way, and who she was taking care of, and she was paying the bills in that house. She was the one, the main one, who was managing their finances. And when they told her to leave the county immediately, I think that it was because they recognized that if she had to leave that county immediately, they would be able eventually to repossess their house and whiten that community, because it only had two black families. Am I, is that right, Ms. Murphy? And she, this happened in 2000, what year was it,
2009? 2009, and again, July 8th, 2010.
Actually, she was arrested twice for running over her husband.
And the second time, they arrested you? Yes, and the second time was because I had had an attorney in probate court to protect his interests. And because I was trying to protect my husband's interests, I was trespassing. And then that's what happened again to me.
Because she realized that house note was getting behind, you see.
Right.
And so this is a wife. This is a husband. They're a couple. This is their home, their property. And she wasn't allowed in that county. So when she showed up in that county again, regarding needing the attorney to protect the property, they arrested her again because her husband called police again and said she ran over him again. Is that right, Ms. Murphy?
Not only is that correct, by that time he was on crack cocaine and had drug people living in my house.
Oh,
and the drug woman, when he called the police, because he knew I was outside, because I had already contacted the family to let him know, you know, for him to cooperate, you know, so we can get him in court, so we can take care of him, because he's one of those 100% incompetent Vietnam veterans, and he's on paper as incompetent, and getting a check for incompetency. This man can't even sign his own name. He can't even go before anyone in the court.
Well, he's a vulnerable adult, isn't he? He's a vulnerable adult, isn't he?
Well, the bottom line, he was taken advantage of, and so something that the public needs to know, and internationally, that this is a situation of what we call plantation law, and these are the laws in the South that they used to use for the slaves, so
right.
They were able to ban the slaves from their homes, telling them that they have to leave, don't come back no more, and this is 2009, and it's still going on in Georgia today, and the FBI and other agencies are not equipped to deal with it because they are a part of the problem because it's called home cooking and the Confederacy. And that's what we're dealing with. Straight up KKK. And people need to understand that it is alive and it's well and it's working. I mean, the people of color.
I am done and over with. I didn't
know it's not done and over with. You should read the 13th Amendment of the United States, and you'll know why so many people are locked up. Slavery is legal under the 13th Amendment.
Yes, slavery is legal under the 13th Amendment as long as they get a criminal conviction. Also, but we know that a great many people are getting a criminal conviction not after a court process. They're getting it because they are, in cases of mentally ill people, they are sometimes held in torture, solitary confinement, unless and until they sign a confession. People are being forced in America, and it's not limited to the mentally ill, but people in America are being forced to sign plea bargains, and they will keep people incarcerated ever how long until they will agree to sign false confessions. So that criminal conviction sometimes is in the absence of due process of law. I just wanted to make sure that people knew that, because people have many different ways that they wind up incarcerated. And with the mentally ill particularly, it appears that it doesn't matter how they get them, they just mean to have them. And if they go in on a simple offense as vagrancy, sometimes that winds up being a life sentence, because once they are behind bars, they keep lengthening the time.
I want to add something that you said. Well, what's most important is that when you're dealing with the mentally ill, they already know, like in my case of my husband, he understands right now that if he were to get some help, he's so afraid of being put back in a mental hospital. He's been there 5 times already. And so he's concerned that if he make any statements, if he do anything to upset the local police, even though his wife has been supposed to be in prison or whatever, he's afraid that he's going to go back to the mental hospital. So they have him intimidated because of his condition, and they keep them abreast of it. Another thing that the police does in Georgia, to do with my particular husband, they are monitoring him right now. He called me last week, and he wanted me to know that the police is asking questions about him because I'm so busy, you know, doing the legal thing, and they're harassing him, you know, because they want to let him know that, you know, we'll lock you up, we'll do this to you, and they know they're dealing with a mentally ill person. So what's most important that I want to say is that the police, I was never provided Miranda rights. I was just snatched out of my car, kidnapped car, and hauled away. No one ever said you have the right to remain silent. Nobody ever asked me my side of the story. I didn't have a side of the story. I was kidnapped and processed and railroaded. And my husband, in his condition, you know, he was a part of it, but he is mentally ill. He can't, I mean, and that's the whole point. By law, he can't even do anything. And then they said to me, after having me in jail the first time, we know you didn't do it, but just stay away from him. You cannot divorce me from my husband.
But they did, didn't they? They did, didn't they? Didn't they really go so far as to divorce you from your husband?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Divorce me, and then on top of that, the paper, they went so far not only to divorce me in one day under the Family Violence Act, they went so much trouble as to assign me an attorney and falsify the court document, the court calendar. I mean, I've never seen judges falsifying court calendars. Judges are signing divorce decrees who are actually lawyers. No lawyer can sign a divorce decree, but this lawyer signed a divorce decree in Georgia, and then they sent it to me a year later. And what's most important is the judge's signature block is a lawyer. His name is Jerry W. Caldwell, and they have him as Jerry W. Caldwell, Judge Pro Hack Vice. No judge can practice Pro Hack Vice. That's what a lawyer do when you go out of town and pick up another case in another jurisdiction.
Well, you know, I'm very impressed with the irregularities of your case and many of these cases. It appears that the court goes out of their way to facilitate what's happening, even if it seems to be corrupt things that are happening. And again, this is Ms. Murphy. She was actually banned from Glynn County, Georgia, on the word only, never an examination, no physical damage, on the word of her husband, who had severe PTSD, he's a Vietnam vet, that he was being repeatedly run over by his wife with her car, and they, after she left and was not able to handle financial matters for the family anymore, He was evicted from the house, and I think that may be the bottom line. What was wanted is the black couple out of that subdivision. As far as you know, Ms. Murphy, there was only one other black family in the subdivision. Is that right?
I wonder if they're still there.
Yes, they're still there, and they're still there because I was there in March 2013. Yes, they're still there, but these are elderly couples. These are older people. I myself, at the time, I'm 59. My husband now is 65 years old. But the bottom line is that they have stolen 5 years out of my life, and then they had the nerve to put me in the data bank as a criminal, which kept me from doing my work as a professional person. I couldn't do anything because they had me damaged in the system. And what's most important is that after I had to do my own case, I had to spend the money on lawyers, I had to do my own case, and then nobody bothered to apologize to me. But yet they didn't have a problem. I had to do my own expungement record. I had to pay $50 out of my pocket to expunge my own record, and it's because of their fraud, their situation. But, you know, and nobody bothered to say, we're so sorry or anything. It's like, you're black, and that's what's expected of you. Get over it. And, you know, and I look at it this way. That's exactly why people are the way they are in the Deep South, in a way, and I say this with great regret, because they're afraid. Absolutely afraid. They're afraid. And, see, I'm speaking out. I'm banning me from my own home, which is illegal and against constitutional law. They thought that they would shut me down, but what they found was that not only was I not shut down, I could read and write and process, and I could critical think, and that's something that nobody was able to do, and that's why they, and then those people, they have not been trying to arrest me on the side by bringing me down there saying, oh, you were here stalking your husband, you were here doing all that. They were bringing him into court, oh, don't look at her, don't you look at him, and I'm saying to myself, they were in a position to try to arrest me. Had I not ever came to court all those many times on false arrest warrants, they would have locked me up, and I would have been no different than Detroit Davis in Atlanta. No different.
Listen, I want to tell the audience how they can look at your videos and get the whole story. That is, her husband's name was Hickman. That is Yvonne.
Can you say that last name, McNeil?
Is Yvonne Hickman, H-I-C-K-M-A-N, Yvonne Hickman.
Okay.
What are those videos named, Ms.?
The videos are under Glenn County, Yvonne Hickman in Glenn County, Georgia. That's how they're going to find
it. Yes, put in your browser, Yvonne Hickman, Glenn, G-L-Y-N, or is it two N's?
L-Y-N-N, Glenn County, Georgia. Yvonne Hickman in Glenn County, Georgia.
Yes.
And you can always do Nathaniel Hickman and Mary Neal. That'll come up.
Yes. My name is, I took these videos for Ms. Hickman, Ms. Murphy, I'm sorry, because she's now no longer with her husband. They actually divorced this family. Understand the ramifications of this. These officials in Glenn County, Georgia, actually broke up this black family the same as used to happen in slavery when they tell a couple, well, jump backwards in your divorce now and sell them apart from each other. You know, this same thing happened in the 2000s that these county officials, judges and what have you, actually separated this couple. It's just amazing to me, as I said. I'm just absolutely...
The separation date is based upon the date of the arrest, December the 3rd, 2009. So how can you divorce a person when you have illegally divorced them? I mean, illegally arrest them, but you use your divorce date as the same date that they're incarcerated illegally. And the bottom line is that the federal court and the FBI in Georgia has looked the other way. But I'm working on them right now.
Well, we're going to work on it, too, because I think the whole world, you know, people say, does racism still exist? Your case is probably as racist as anyone who's been shot by police, unarmed. Your case is every bit as racist as Michael Brown's death, because this is where the sanctity of marriage was interrupted in order to separate a family and remove them from their property based on the hallucinations of a mentally ill man. And so, again, Yvonne Murphy's case, what her problem started with is this idea that you cannot, families are not allowed to have their loved ones with severe mental illness committed as inpatients. They're not allowed to enforce treatment unless that person proves to be a danger to self and others. And frankly, by the time a person has proved it, it's already too late in a lot of cases.
Well, the bottom line is that a mentally ill person, they know their rights too, and they know their rights. They know what they can and cannot do. And in the regard of my husband, he has been mandated by the Veterans Administration to go into counseling forever. And the point is, in the Texas medicine, but see, you can't force these people into treatment. That's the problem. They have this, like, whatever they the person decides. So if a person decides that they want to go to treatment, take the medicine and be okay, that's fine. But if they don't take the medicine, like in my regard, and they don't go to counseling and they fall on the wayside and start taking street drugs, you've got somebody going into deterioration. And my husband went into deterioration, and the police allowed it. They wanted it to happen so they could put more pressure on me and more pressure on him, because they had their ultimate goal.
You to know there are quite a few veterans from battlefields all the way from Vietnam and Korea all the way up to Afghanistan and whoever is being fought now, Iraq. They're in jail. Lots of veterans are in jail. So
if you have PTSD and a head injury, you're going to jail.
This is Diana Sprouse. Her son is Mark, and Mark Bowles, B-O-W-L-E-S.
We didn't hear her name.
Her name is Diana Sprouse. She has a son who's a veteran, and he had a head injury, and he also has epilepsy. And so go ahead and tell us a little bit about it, Diana.
Yeah, and he also has I guarantee you, nowadays, if you're a veteran and you're coming back from Afghanistan or Iraq, you know, because these are all head injuries. We're coming back with a lot of head injuries. That comes down from those boards. Yeah, they put them in jail because they are afraid of them. I just learned this recently from my son was just an outpatient. He slit his throat because he suffers from severe depression as well. But anyhow, and he was wrongfully convicted. He has to go to sentencing on September 25th for a crime he never committed. He was actually in a hospital when these people alleged he supposedly assaulted them, when in fact they assaulted him. This was the craziest thing I ever saw. We went to court, jury trial, and the judge right away said, all defense evidence will be suppressed. This was before the hearing started. And we were not able to present one Not one person could testify on his behalf. He couldn't even testify for himself, although he had no memories of any of it. I couldn't testify for him. None of the medical records that would have, you know, just the medical records from the same hospital would have proved that he was innocent, but they were not admissible. Nothing was admissible. So he's looking at 99 years. 99 years for being in, and he, this was the sixth day he was there in intensive care. He had been overdosed. He had been beaten in the head, profusely, by a man in jail. And he, so he had another head injury, was having epilepsy, really bad, lots of seizures, couldn't get them to stop, was very sick, and got him to the hospital by ambulance, found out that he was overdosed on one of his medications, which is phenobarbital. It would be like drinking a gallon of whiskey.
And that happened while he was incarcerated, that he got overdosed on that. And he
has to... That's what's happening with my son right now, Ms. Neal, that I tried to do an investigation on because, like Diana was saying, that they medicated him out, because that's what they do. What they do is medicate him out so they can be stoned or whatever, and they do what they want with him. I'm waiting on
exactly. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm rough to you, but that's exactly why my husband, Mr. Hickman, is the way he is, because what you're describing is what he's gone through. And just go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay, Mom. If you want to speak, I've already spoke, but you're welcome to speak or let me. It doesn't matter. I will get my story out there.
Absolutely. You know, the wonderful thing about this legal action going to the United Nations is that right here we show, just among you few, we show how detrimental it is to people with physical health conditions like Mark Bowles to also have a mental health condition, because sometimes the physical health condition is completely disregarded. Mark Bowles has traumatic brain injury. He has also epilepsy, which is really, it was classified as being a mental health condition, but really it's a physical condition. And so he has traumatic brain injury and epilepsy, and those two conditions that are physical have what else, Dana?
Stress disorder and severe depression.
Right. See, those are mental conditions. And so often people's physical conditions are ignored when they have a mental condition. There was a case that happened a couple of years ago where this lady named Mary went to St. Mary's Hospital, and she said her legs were hurting real bad, and because she was obviously homeless, they didn't thoroughly treat her for her legs that she kept saying were hurting. In other words, they sort of disregarded her physical condition once they found out, probably in talking to her, that she wasn't completely stable mentally. People can have dual conditions. Yes, and the hospital actually told her she had to leave now. They had already treated her legs, and she had to go. And she refused to go because she was hurting so badly. She kept insisting that they must help her with her pain in her legs. And she got in a wheelchair because she couldn't stand up. But they called police on her at that point because they figured she was just a vagrant looking for a place to stay. And when police came, she was arrested for trespassing at the hospital. And they put her in the back of the car where she lay in pain on the ride to the jail. By the time she got to the jail and was processed, she was unable to even walk into the cell. We see on the video them carrying her into the cell. And it is said by police that within an hour, when someone went to check on her, she was dead. And a blood clot in her legs had traveled to her brain or to her heart or whatever, and she had died. And so people who have died or who have experienced exacerbated physical conditions because they were ignored once the hospitals found out they had mental illness, once the doctors found out they had mental illness, once the jail knew they were mentally ill, physical conditions are allowed to get worse and worse, even to the point of wrongful death. And so,
I can't tell you how many times that's happened to Mark. That's happened more times than I can count.
My son, this ladies who are the listeners, has a bullet right now as we speak where the officers shot him, knowing that this man was mentally ill just less than 24 hours just prior to the meds. We have 14 witnesses that state to Channel 13 that he was crying and begging for the medication. If you can look up the story, his name is Sergio Robles, S-E-R-G-I-O. R-O-B-L-E-S, and he has a bullet right now. As it is, he was suffering from schizophrenia. It's a brain disorder also. See, like I was saying about your loved ones, it's postpartum depression. It's a brain disorder is what it is. Yeah. And the thing is, he's still with a bullet in his head, and they're still, to this day, harassing him, harassing me, retaliating, discriminating him, violating his civil rights. He is in prison, I understand, but he is a human being, and we all have rights. And just because they're in prison doesn't mean they don't have rights. They're human beings, they have rights too. But the thing is, they cannot speak up. A lot of them are, like Ms. Mel said, a lot of them are mentally ill. Why? Because she was stating that for each inmate, there's $50,000, from my understanding, but as Neil was saying the other day, that they have the $50,000 for each person, and when they have a mental illness, it's a lot more, right, Ms. Neal? That's what you were stating to me.
Absolutely. For instance, whatever the prison is getting from taxpayers to punish a person for being mentally ill. In New York, it's $168,000 per inmate per year. And New York is $168,000 per inmate per year. Now, that can go up substantially if a person is mentally ill and in solitary confinement. So it varies from state to state how much the state is charged for each inmate. In Georgia, I believe they're charged right around $25,000 per inmate per year, and in Louisiana it's less than that. So I'm not sure what the rate is in Texas. I believe I looked it up once regarding this man who was wrongfully convicted. In Texas, it seemed, if I'm right, according to my memory, it was about $50,000 a year, but being mental illness or any other illness can push it up double. Because, and I think that's also why they love to put the mentally ill in solitary confinement, because solitary confinement is much more expensive than keeping that person in the general population. So as cruel as it is, it's all about... So I wanted to explain to you how what we're going to ask for when we go to international court. First of all, we're going to ask for billions of dollars, billions. We're going to ask for enough to compensate each individual for their pain and suffering, for their wrongful death losses, for their years of wrongful incarceration and torture in solitary confinement, for the property loss, such as Ms. Murphy suffered. So we're going to ask for enough that we'll be able to compensate people who are in this action, the claimants, for what they've been through, including people like if that officer that Sergio Robles killed, if his family comes on, including wrongful death, because that family probably is having to just make it on a little policeman's pension when that officer should not have been killed like that. He was killed because the system had deliberately withheld Sergio's mental health, and he got called to the scene, and he died in a crisis that should never have happened. The people out in Santa Barbara, California, some of them need to join this legal action because their relatives should not have perished at the hands of Elliot Roger. Elliot Roger's family had called police. They had actually consulted the police because they were concerned about Elliot Roger's deteriorating mental health. They knew about those videos he was making saying that he would kill girls who didn't date him. And they had done all that they knew to do to reach out. They had him in mental health treatment, but it was inadequate. But they called police when they were concerned that a crisis was imminent. And nobody responded by taking Elliot Roger into involuntary commitment. That's the thing. Cannot involuntarily commit somebody, almost never, unless they already proved to be a danger to another. Now, these people, this shows that these conditions cross socioeconomic lines, as the fact that we're all here on this phone together already proves that it crosses all racial lines. Elliot Rogers' father was an executive producer on movies. He was the producer, one of the producers of Hunger Games, the movie. So it doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor, black or white or Latino, and I'm glad that we have those three categories represented in this phone call. You are considered almost subhuman for illness, and you are denied treatment for a variety of reasons. And I think it all goes back to one reason, and that is the prison profiteering system. They want people preserved untreated until they do something worthy of arrest. And that is such a standard way for intake to perceive of people that we know that last December, a Virginia senator was refused treatment for his son, Gus Deeds. Senator Deeds, a state senator of Virginia, was turned away from three facilities, mental health facilities, with Gus, who was in a schizophrenic crisis. And Gus went home with his father, and he tried to stab his father. He did stab him, cut him in the face. And not only that, but when his father managed to get away from Gus, Gus, a young man, I think he was no more than 20 or 19, 20, 21, very young, he killed himself. Senator Deese has sued for that. And so that's the situation. I want you to know that it may be that even if you have been turned away, even if your cases have been dismissed from these courts in America, you can still join this international lawsuit. Even if your cases have been settled, you may be able to still join these international lawsuits because, frankly, so much has happened to someone like Ms. Murphy, that even if she had been compensated, which she has not, but even if she had been compensated for one or two things, that's not to say that she's been made whole on everything. So my best advice to people, you have a loved one with untreated mental illness who has gone into crisis, who has caused havoc, just go ahead and join this international claimant class anyway, because we have international attorneys, international lawyers, who will be able to sort out whether or not your case really belongs. So don't try to make that decision yourself, whether or not your case really belongs here. Even if you've already gotten a settlement, say your loved one was shot by police and you took a settlement, there may be other avenues that have not been covered. And we would appreciate, even if you have settled your case, and even if it's over, appreciate your story being in the packet, because everything that happens to any of us has happened to probably hundreds of thousands of other people. So each person adding their story, it gives an opportunity for the United Nations to understand the breadth of the problem. Go ahead, please.
Yes, ma'am. What I wanted to say is that not only my son is being tackled and harassed and discriminated for me, myself, I was unlawfully arrested in October the 11th. They arrested me. They the other lady that was saying that they made it like a criminal. I'm also supposedly a criminal. I had to go to bond. I asked why was I being arrested. I was at a public library, minding my own business, trying to get access into the computer so I can write. I was going to do something, and since I already had been retaliated, I was already feeling something was going on. I asked one of my coworkers, a secretary at my job, if she could help me to change my password, because I wasn't very good in computer. I'm kind of computer illiterate and problems. So I asked her if she can do me that big favor, because they had told me they were going to move my phone. Well, when I called her from the public library, she asked me, are you in jail? And I told her, no, why do you say that? She said, because it's showing that you're in jail. No, I was at a public library. But then I got up again because it wasn't working to use the public phone. And the Indian manager lady there that was there, I have their names and everything, told me that I could not use the phone. So I went back and sat down. And when I got to sit down, I see two officers come and pick me up, take me outside. And I'm like, why don't you arrest me for this? He says, they don't know what to tell me. They prosecuted me in the sense of fingerprinted me, did the whole process of what they do when they arrest you. And then when I was in there was people in there stating of what they do, that they kill people, that these officers have done this, and they put all kinds of things that they were telling me in there, these ladies that were in there. So all in all, I ended up getting several officers, why did you arrest me? And he said, you have warrants. I said, Sam, I don't have any warrants. He said, well, you have disorderly conduct. So all in all, supposedly it's disorderly conduct. At this point, now they're saying that I've never been arrested. And that's what they did to my phone. What it is they prey on the weak. They prey on the sick. They take advantage of the poor. And you don't have money to speak up. And right now, they're saying that I don't have charges. I went to the attorney. Remember, Ms. Mayor, I told you about that? That I went and they told me that there's nothing showing. I asked the attorney, well, can you give me something stating that it's not showing? He cannot do that. So, I mean, does that sound legal right to you?
Now,
I thought that they were retaliating on me as a mother.
It does.
Of my son.
The thing is that, you know, she lives in a small area in Texas, a small town area, and she's known as the mother, Pasadena, she's known as the mother of a cop killer. And they arrested her for much of nothing, and that phone was already tapped. It appears if the person you called got, instead of getting a public library, the call coming from the public library, the call showed that it came from the police department. And being she was arrested, and they couldn't think of what to charge her with, and they finally charged her with disorderly conduct. But now her lawyer tells her that when he looks at the computer, he doesn't see any warrants or any charges. He doesn't see any of that. But yet he refuses to write for her that, I can't defend you any further on this because it's been dismissed. First, they told her the case had been dismissed. If a case has been dismissed, she wants a court order that the case has been dismissed. She wants at least her attorney to sign the case has been dismissed. She doesn't want to be raided one night by one of those people named SWAT. And she doesn't want her home raided by SWAT. And you say that she had warrants she ignored, or you say she had court dates that she ignored. If she's got charges, she wants to know it. She wants to stand for those charges. And if she doesn't have charges, she wants someone to please write it down. You don't have charges. The case is dismissed. It, you know, don't just have it, now you see me, now you don't. That's the trick the Cochran firm played on us. The Cochran firm played that trick on my family. Now you see us, now you don't. When we sued the Jenny Cochran firm, they got the judge to say they didn't exist in the state of Georgia. And if you look up the Cochran firm, you'll see their offices in the state of Georgia. All you had to do at the time was turn on the TV and see their offices in the state of Georgia. But they got the judge to dismiss our lawsuit after their fraud that they did against us to cover up the secret arrest and wrongful death of Larry Neal, and you can look that case up online, wrongful death of Larry Neal. They got the judges in these courts in Georgia, some of the same courts that Ms. Yvonne Murphy is dealing with. They got them to say that they didn't exist in the state of Georgia. And when we sued them in federal court, they said they didn't have any Cochran firm law offices in the city of Memphis. And they want to keep me quiet about this because the Cochran firm is steadily going around representing African Americans in police murder cases or police brutality cases. And that same office, if I'm not mistaken, that defrauded my family, kept our case secretly inactive while the statute of limitations ran, that same law firm in Memphis is the one that Chavis Carter's mother is depending on. Chavis Carter is a young black man. He was not mentally ill, but he was arrested in the back of an Arkansas police car. He had already been searched twice. He was handcuffed behind the back, and he allegedly committed suicide with a hidden pistol. He allegedly shot himself in the right temple with, and he was left-handed, Chavis Carter. They now depend on that same office of the Jenny Cochran firm that my family depended on and relied on regarding the wrongful death of Larry Neal. Now, we can only talk one other time. But I just want to say, okay, that's fine. I just want to say that that is how the mentally ill are treated, and that is how the families of the mentally ill are treated. Not only are our loved ones' human and civil rights disregarded totally in America at this point, but anyone who tries to stand up for their mentally ill loved ones is also deprived of due process of law rights. Are you agreeing with me, ladies?
Yes. Yes, I agree.
And also, what I would like to say, I'm the aunt of Sergio Robles. They're calling him a cop killer, but you look at the video at the first video of the case in 2006, the Santa Fe cop, where they beat him to death all. And that video, it shows that Sergio was, after we won the case, they had an interview with him, and he was talking. He looked like he was okay, everything was okay. But they're calling him a cop killer. Now, do you think that if he was a cop killer, you don't think he would go in for the cop that almost killed him in 2006? Okay, so he is not a cop killer, because if he was, he would have gone back and tried to kill those cops that almost killed him. And then the video shows where they slammed him on the ground and started beating him. I mean, left him more mixed up. So, you know, he is not a cop killer. My nephew is not a cop killer. He didn't have no, he wasn't into gangs. He was a good kid. But But they messed him up. They're the ones that left him more messed up now that he's getting worse now, because when you see him, you can see that he's not all there no more. And he's paranoid. Yeah, he's all paranoid. Yeah. And also, it tortures him and tortures the family, because it tortures us too, you know? Him being like that, that seeing him like he's not a normal person. They're the ones that messed him up, you know? And I think that there should be justice. And they can hide from everybody else, but they can't hide from the man upstairs, the ones that are doing torture to all these prisoners. They can't hide from them, because God sees everything, and there will be justice one day for all the mental patients. And that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you very much.
Yolanda Garcia.
Thank you, Yolanda Garcia. Thank you very much for your impassioned input. And the thing is, we've all cried. We have all cried over our loved ones.
Yes.
My brother was secretly arrested for 18 days, and I don't know what they did with him during those 18 days. Waterboarded him, used him for medical experiments. For some reason, the police, they did not acknowledge that he was incarcerated. And I heard one of you say, you were saying about the arresting process. That was Ms. Ogla. She was saying that she was taken through the arrest process just to harass her, probably, and how they took fingerprints in the picture. And I thought to myself, my brother did all of that. And they knew they had Larry Neal incarcerated in Memphis Shelby County Jail. They do that every time you're arrested. If you're arrested 20 times, you're fingerprinted 20 times. Am I right, ladies?
Okay.
Yes.
And so they lied to us, and they lied to Larry's social worker and claimed they did not have him incarcerated because they wanted to do what they did to him. They had told my brother. See, these people are premeditated murderers, some of them.
Yes.
They had told my brother 2 weeks before Larry's fatal arrest that they were sick of fooling with Larry Neal. That's why the government, that's why Shelby County, that's why they even got the Cochran firm to represent us, somebody who's COINTELPRO. And this was not just a murder, a passion. This was a cold-blooded, premeditated murder, because they planned this. They planned this, and they even told my brother 2 weeks before Larry Neal's fatal arrest that they were sick of food with Larry Neal. And then they took him in jail. They refused him his psychiatric medication and his vital heart. That's why I say that sometimes psychiatric crises can overlap medical conditions that the people have a very strong need for their medical attention as well. So all of these circumstances we are talking about happen to people with severe mental illness. Now, the way we're going to work out this monetary compensation for your damages is, and I said this yesterday on tape, I ask you to please go back and listen to yesterday's tape. We're going to have a spreadsheet, and it will have categories. And the categories may include, has your relative ever been assaulted by police? Have they ever been assaulted by people in the community because they're mentally ill and they're obviously sick? Have they ever been homeless long-term? Was your relative killed? Was your relative in solitary confinement for a period of time? And each one of those things, and it doesn't have to be those, there will be many, many categories, but you'll get a check mark for each category. You'll get a check mark for each category. And the check marks determine how much of the total compensation you will receive. Are you following me so far?
Yes.
And so that's why it's important to have your records, because we have to be able to verify every claim, you know, we'll put the check mark that your relative was rendered homeless, Ms. Murphy, because they got rid of his caretaker, you. We'll put that. But then I know that you have your paperwork to prove that. Is that right?
I do, and I'm needing your fax number so I can send you the POA and all the rest of the other records that I have.
Well, we're going to wait until, you know, I'll call for the records when it's time.
Okay.
You know, I'll call for them when it's time. Right now, this meeting today was just to introduce the public and our claimants with the understanding of what types of cases are going to be represented and the Amy versus USA lawsuit. And so they can see the gravity of these cases. And right here on the phone today, just to reiterate because we're wrapping up, we have one woman whose son was incarcerated on a sentence of 40 years, trial denied, because when you take a mentally ill person's word for I want to plea bargain instead of listening to his mother, who has his power of attorney, that was wrong in itself. So she feels that he should have gone to court as a person who was not guilty by reason of insanity, but they scared him so badly that after 2 years, they got him. How long was it? 2 years before he said that.
Yeah. My understanding, the statute of limitations is 2 years, so they kept him here for 2 years without going to trial, and then they sentenced him after 2 years, so I wouldn't do a lawsuit or whatever.
Isn't that something? So what happened to Ms. Olga's son, and she's done interviews with us at Human Rights Demand. So if you put in Human Rights Demand, I'll have the date for you, and I'll post it. I'll have the exact link for you so that you can actually hear her tell you the entire story, not only her, but her son, who at the time was a teenager in the house with her son when the police officer was killed. And then we also heard a little from Diana Sprouse, whose son, Mark Bowles, is going through hell right now. He's got a sentencing coming up. Off this trial, did you hear her say that the judge mandated that there would be no defense allowed in Mark Bowles' trial? Did everybody hear that? There was no defense allowed. No witnesses were allowed for Mark Bowles. No defense whatsoever was allowed in Mark Bowles' trial. And the judge said this. No defense. And the jury even sent back and asked questions about Mark Bowles. Is that right, Diana? Diana, she's not feeling well. Her son is home now. He is very upset, awaiting sentencing. And she told you a little bit of it, but let me explain to you that her son is arrested for having an epileptic fit. He has epilepsy. That's what epileptic people do. They have seizures. He's essentially arrested for having an epileptic seizure, okay? And now he faces sentencing for having an epileptic seizure that frightened a nurse or a healthcare provider, and the healthcare provider failed trying to move away from him. She failed.
What a nurse?
Her son did not hit her, did not touch her.
But a nurse? A nurse is a certified person who knows about these illnesses, about epileptic seizures. I mean, come on.
Any excuse will do to put a mentally ill person in jail to fill one of those seats. Any excuse will do. And so Mark Bowles faces sentencing for having epileptic seizure. The jury sent back and asked two questions. The jury asked, is Mark Bowles, does he have any mental health conditions? And the jury asked, number two, was Mark Bowles taking any medications or what have you that would have caused this. And the judge told them, don't, you know, I'm not going to answer your questions, and you will not get any information to decide on Mark Bowles' guilt or innocence other than what you already heard in court. So he refused to answer the jury's questions because the jury knew they had gotten incomplete information, and they sent for it, and the judge refused. So this is how determined the USA is to incarcerate people with mental illness. And it's simply a prison investment scheme. It is human trafficking in our most vulnerable citizens, and we beg the United Nations to help us. Help us, please, because our human rights are being trampled in the USA. Our human rights are being trampled. People are being, it's never that you will open a USA newspaper that covers national news that you won't see where one or two mentally ill people have been killed by police, and I want you to know in most cases they were deprived of treatment. It's almost never that you will open any reputable USA newspaper online and not see where the homeless have been killed by police or killed by people in their communities. Help us, please. Everyone has a right to life. Everyone has a right to life. Help the Declaration of Human Rights to be honored. Honored. Help it to be not just words on paper. You know, Martin Luther King said, all we ask of America is be true to what you said on paper. That was a problem over 50 years ago, and it's still a problem today. And we're going to put these circumstances in writing in our complaint. We're sending our complaint to the international court because we know we won't find justice in the USA. We know that our loved ones have been turned over for prison profits. We know that families who try to intervene in this process, especially Mary Neal, are censored and persecuted and stalked and everything else. You heard what happened to Miss Olga, Miss Olga Garcia. She was persecuted for trying to stand up for her son. I'm being persecuted for trying to stand up for all of you, for all of you. As a matter of fact, they sprayed another big Confederate X over my house today. If you look online, you will see Mary Neal X over her house. So y'all pray for me. Pray for